Blog Talk Radio.
I wake up, I see you. As you leave, I feel it, I see it, as you leave.
Good afternoon, this is Ami Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining us once again. This is your host, Twamboka Pilikisha with Diaspora and Truth. I appreciate you being here and joining us on the program as usual. Thank you so much for all your participation. Thank you for writing us and liking us on Facebook and interacting with us on Twitter. We really, really appreciate it. Today we have a special guest on the show. Her name is Mukuka Mayuka. And if you have been listening to Diaspora and Truth for a while, you will know that Mukuka was the former host of the show. So she is very, very familiar with how Zambia Block Talk Radio works. She's familiar with what kind of subjects we'd like to talk about. So I would just like to welcome her onto the show today. Welcome, Mukuka, all the way from Lusaka.
Hi, how are you?
We are well, thank you. We're glad that you are here. And for anybody that was listening last week, you know that Mukuka came on the show for the last half hour of last week's show, and she was talking about her experience with moving back to Zambia and what that meant and everything that she went through. And because of, you know, how popular that information is and how right it is for everyone to listen to it, we have her on the show again. So Mukuka, thank you for being on the show to let us know about, you know, your move back to Lusaka, what it entails, how people can prepare, and things like that. So first of all, I'd just like to have you speak to our listeners and tell them what it is you're doing in Lusaka. For those of you that, for those that don't know you, what are you doing in Lusaka, and where did you move from to go back to Zambia?
Okay. So I moved from Melbourne, Australia, where I'd been living for about, since 1985 or something, when my parents moved there. Well, they actually moved to Hobart in Tasmania, and then we moved to Melbourne. But it's been a while since I've been back in Zambia, and I've only been back once or twice to visit family and friends and things like that. But then last year, I decided that I wanted to go home and try out to actually further my business. So I started a blog that was basically promoting Zambian content, Zambian businesses, Zambian individuals, and anything that I could really find online about Zambia. From that, a friend of mine kind of said to me, you know what you should do? You should do this as a profession to promote people's content, people's businesses online. And I didn't know you could do that. But she said you could, and I thought, okay, let me check that out. And I participated in the in an award show from Melbourne, Australia. So what I was doing, I was tweeting and Facebooking and watching the show live, and I was helping out the National Arts Council for their Ngoma Awards. So from that, we started getting quite a few queries about whether we could do work for more individuals and for more businesses, and I thought, well, I have to go home. I have to register my business. I have to meet people. I have to attend these meetings. And that's what I did. So in May, I kind of packed up all my stuff, said bye to my parents and my brother, and moved to Zambia. And I've been here ever since. I run a social media management and consultancy company called Circa Media Zambia. It's registered. It was registered last year. And, yeah, it's going quite well.
Okay, great. I mean, I'm glad to hear that everything is working out so well. And a lot of people, you know, think about, especially Africans in diaspora, we think about, you know, we want to go home, and people have different reasons for wanting to move back home. What would you say were your main reasons?
I think one of the reasons that kind of hit me in the last 2 years was, my mom and my dad and my brother live in Australia. However, I just kind of figured, well, my parents are getting old. and God forbid they should pass away, it would just be my brother and I in Australia. I mean, we have a community of Zambians, but they're not really my family as such, even though I've grown up with the Zambian community for a lot of my life. They weren't really like my family members. So I really wanted to come home, number one, for family. Number two, the growing of my business, it was taking off, and I wanted to see what else I could do. I was kind of tired of the job that I had in Australia. So I'm a legal professional, but then I thought, I'm kind of tired of the legal profession. Let me try this out, which is what I'm more passionate about, and seems to be taking off. So, yeah, it was basically family, business, and just a different lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of Africans, when they want to go home, and a lot of expatriates, they want to move back to their home country, they think about, they want to add more value to where they're from. I mean, you've talked about you've given your reasons why you want to move back to Zambia, and somebody could ask, why didn't you just continue running your media company, you know, in Australia? And yes, you wanted to concentrate on Zambian content, but that is something that you could have also done in Australia. Adding more value to your country and making a difference from where you're from, would you say that was also a main reason that you wanted to move back?
I did, but I think you can still, yes, you can add value from where you are, but I think that moving home for me was a lot easier to do a lot of the things that I wanted to. I mean, like when you can say yes, you can run your business from home, but you can't attend these meetings, you can't build relationships with people, you can't actually see your work at hand. Just, you know what I mean? Like being a part of certain events and things like that, you can tweet about them on Facebook, but being at the event and tweeting while you're at the event is a totally different experience, that's quite different than when you're sitting at home on your computer, you know, in Australia. It's very, very different. So, yes, I did want to add value, and I think I was adding value anyway. You know, I was part of Zambia Blog Talk Radio. I was blogging about Zambia. I think I was adding value to my country from being outside it, but I thought, let me come home and even add more value by being home and contributing to the economy. I mean, having a business and then hiring people to do work through that business, I think that's also adding it's assisting the country to develop.
Mm-hmm. So how big of a leap of faith did you have to take to go home? Because I think that there's a lot of Zambians that are in the diaspora that are thinking, yes, I want to move home. And before we get into, you know, the logistics and the bureaucracy of what you have to do, I sort of just want to talk about, yeah, you know, where you were in your mind, what space you were in. Did you just decide, I'm going to do it and that's it? Because I think a lot of people think about it, but they don't actually even start to make the plans to move home. So what would you say your state of mind was, you know, towards the move and when you finally said, okay, I'm going to do it?
I think I was thinking about it for about 2 years, for a good 2 years, where it was really, yes, this is an option for me to one day go home. And then a year before I actually did it, I thought, well, you know, I'd had the blog for a while, and I thought, okay, there's so much going on in Zambia, and I felt like I was just missing out on a lot of stuff. If you're on Twitter and Facebook and you see a lot of Zambians tweeting about what they're doing, the events they're attending, what's going on in the country, you felt like I'm missing out. And, you know, it could just be FOMO, a fear of missing out, but I really just wanted to be home. So it took me about a good 2 years to actually start thinking about the idea that I really want to go home. And it took me maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks to actually book the ticket and just say, I'm going. Because I think you can sit there and think, oh, we want to do it, what's going to happen. But when you actually start planning things, when you start telling people, okay, I've quit my job. Like, I think the first process is you quit the job, and then you start working towards, you know, going home. That's when you're like, okay, this is for real. So I think that took me about a month. And 2 months before that, I had kind of started saving money for my ticket, for living at home, for living in Zambia and things like that. So, yeah, it took me roughly about 3 months to actually say, okay, I'm done, I'm going. But the decision to actually book the ticket and everything, it was like a split-second thing.
Okay. So a lot of people that I know that have, you know, decided to move home are people that may have started their business already in whatever country they're in. So, for example, you started blogging and you started your media company while you were mm-hmm. still in Australia, and then they sort of just shifted and moved it onto the Zambian mm-hmm. market. You know, would you advise that this is one of the best things you can do mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, just quitting your job and having money saved up and then I'm going to move to Lusaka? What would you say about that? What kind of plan would you encourage somebody mm-hmm. to have? It may not be just having a company thought of already like you did.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, I think that was the easiest because I was confident in what I was doing. It was the easiest. So if you already have something, then you kind of also, you throw caution to the wind and say, well, look, if it doesn't work out in Zambia, at least I can come back to Australia and continue what I was doing. Because mm-hmm. I was already doing that. I was already doing the blogging and getting paid for blogging. So my idea was, if it doesn't work out in Zambia, I'll come back home. I won't go back into the legal profession. I'll just continue blogging from Australia. That was kind of my plan. I think it's kind of the safest way to do it, because then at least you have a net, something to fall back on, especially if you're a little bit scared and wary of failure, as we all are. So mm-hmm. for me, I feel like that was the easiest way to do it. I've known other people who've just kind of, they have an idea of a business that they want to do, mm-hmm. and they get on the plane and they get to Zambia, and then they start working on building their business in Zambia. That's also mm-hmm. a good way of doing it, but you, mm-hmm. I think for that, it requires you to have a bigger plan in place, in the sense that you know who you're meeting, you know what sort of meetings you're setting up way before you even land, who you need to see to kind of get the ball rolling, what money you need to fund your business, do you need an office, are you going to work from home? You need to find out all of that stuff before you actually arrive in Zambia, especially if you just have an idea and not really any kind of contacts or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, you've talked about, you know, even if people have an idea, is it possible for somebody that is abroad, if they have a business idea, how can they do some market research on whether this business would do well in Zambia or not? Because a lot of times you will hear persons already doing this kind of business and they're making a profit, so, you know, yes, I should go ahead and do that. But there are some novel ideas that may work in the countries abroad that we live in that may not necessarily work in Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way that somebody can actually do some research without mm-hmm. having to ask their relatives, you know, that are in Zambia?
Well, I think the relatives, we shouldn't, like, disregard relatives. Relatives are always, especially for the ones you trust, I think they're good, they're a great starting point. To ask them, is this happening? Can you find out for me if this business is popular? Is anyone doing anything like this? I have a cousin who recently came to visit and have a look around and see what was going on, who was on holiday for about 2 weeks. And he has a great idea, and he just wanted to see what was going on. And for him, you know, he asked me, like, how has it been? You know, I mean, for him, he was already here, but he had already been asking me and calling me and DMing me to ask me what was going on in Zambia and whether this was a good idea. And for me, I was able to scout for him and come back with him, to him and say, look, there's not really, the idea that you have is not really, it's a novel idea. Not many people are doing it and in fact know about it. So you bring it here and see if you can do it. It's kind of hard. You never know what's going to be a success and what's going to be a failure. A lot of people said to me, social media, who's going to pay you to tweet or Facebook, really, mm-hmm. basically. So I don't know, but I've got one or two people who are willing to do it already. So I'm mm-hmm. hoping that, you know, one or two will go into three or four. And, you know, I got here and nobody, from my research, I Googled social media managers Zambia, I Googled social media management company Zambia, and I could find nothing. I came here and I set up the business. 3 months on, I Googled social media management companies again, and I found about four, two in the Copperbelt and two in Lusaka. one claiming to be the first social media management company of its kind, even though that it had opened up like just a week, I think a month after I had come back. So you know what I mean? Like it's the idea. I think if you have an idea, you have to implement it and see where you go. It's a huge leap of faith. There's no actual formula or any sort of actual net for you to say that, okay, this is going to work unless you try it. And if you fail, I think you just have to try again or try something different.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think that there's a lot of ideas that, you know, people will see being in the diaspora and they automatically write things off and say that would never work in Zambia. So, for example, people did tell you that that would never work, but you've gone ahead and you've done it and it's doing well. And I think that's what is so great about the Zambian market right now, is that it's in a way young and fresh and people are willing to embrace new ideas. Would you agree with that statement, that this is the time to come to Zambia and do something different?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I mean, for me, one of the first groups that I kind of featured on the blog was Bongo Hive, and it's a technology hub. There's no other technology hub in Zambia or Lusaka that I know of. And when they started about 2-3 years ago, people were like, technology hub, like, why? You guys are just playing with computers. Who's going to use your space and things like that? Like, it's a crazy idea. However, Bongo Hive is now grown, and it's a place where a lot of creative, entrepreneur-type, technological-type, they all hang out and congregate and attend events that side, and that's where you meet a lot of people for business half of the time. I'm there Monday to Friday normally for about 2 or 3 hours a day, kind of having meetings sometimes with people or just chatting with the co-founders and stuff. And you just come across a lot of kids who are really energetic. There's one kid who has just recently inspired me. His name is David. He's in India currently studying computer science. He was originally studying a law degree, which he decided to kind of ditch after attending an event at Bongo High. So you can imagine this kid attends this tech hub that he's never heard of. He's not a techie at all. He's not, has no kind of tech background. He's more of a business law type of guy. And he comes to this tech hub, he gets immersed in this culture where, you know, all these people come through with their great ideas, they've got entrepreneurial kind of backgrounds and creatives and things like that. And he decides, well, you know, I'm going to just ditch the whole law thing and take up computer science. And right now he's studying in India doing that. But he has one startup, and he started up a company called Taximania. And basically what Taximania does is, you call up a taxi, or you can either call up the taxi or WhatsApp for a taxi or Facebook or tweet them for a taxi cab service, and the taxi will come and get you, and it's at the standardized rate. So you know, for example, from Manderhill to Chelsea, you know exactly the price that you're going to pay. It's not one of those things where you get into a cab and it depends on what the cab driver tells you. You know, if it's 15 kilometers, this is how much 15 kilometers will be. And that's a young kid, he's like 21, who's come up with this idea, and he's at school right now, and he's running his company from India, and then he has two of his friends kind of attending the meetings and taking care of the contracts. So for me, I was kind of sitting down with him and going through his social media strategy. So I'm giving him social media strategy tips and things like that to run his business online and how to do it better. So you can kind of see that people's ideas, especially the young kids, it's something that someone would have said, that's not going to work. But he has like about 1,500 people on his Facebook page that like his page, and you have 3 or 4 people a day kind of, you know, going on there and asking, how much is it from Charleston to Northmead, or how much is it from Northmead to Olympia? And, you know, can you come and pick me up now? It is a service that's working. And you want to then develop that into an app so that you can have it on your phone and simply book a taxi that way.
Wow. That's really, really impressive to hear, because I think that when you are in the diaspora, you don't even know that things like that are happening back home. All you think about is people, you know, working in the bank, working in the government and things like that. But innovative ideas are things that you don't normally hear about. And I'm excited that you are here telling us these things. Now, I would like to get into the stuff that everybody wants to hear. And this would be the financial and bureaucratic, you know, information. You know, you talked about how people should know how much it's going to cost to sort of start up their business and moving back and things like that. What about in terms of, okay, you've moved back and housing, and of course people go back and they live with their family for a while, but they may be interested in eventually moving to their own place if they already do not have property. Is it easy to move back and after a while find a good affordable place to live? What is housing like, especially in Lusaka right now? Let's concentrate on Lusaka for a minute.
Lusaka is expensive. Let's just start there. Lusaka is very expensive. I currently live with my aunt and uncle, who my mom's older sister, and they've been lovely enough to let me stay with them for the last 8 months. But I am moving into my own place in about a month or so. So for me, it's taken me a year just to kind of get together and get something and find something appropriate, something not too far away, something within my price range, and a place that I feel is nice enough that I would want to move into. So you have all of these things. House hunting in Zambia is difficult. It's not as easy as, you know, where we're in the diaspora, where you kind of just log on and then you find your place and start searching. But house hunting is never easy, but it's just a little bit more difficult in Zambia. You can still house hunt before you come to Zambia. There's a lot of, I think HomeNet is their real estate agent, and they have a website, and they also have a Facebook page, and they post up properties available for rent, to rent or actually purchase and things like that. So you can still do your research online before you come home. But when you do come home, you will notice that housing is very, very expensive, especially if you're renting. That's where people make their income a lot of the time. They buy a property and then they rent it out for a lot. And roughly you get about 2,000 kwacha a month, 2,000, 3,000 kwacha a month for a one-bedroom spot. So that's just one bedroom. And I think that's, that's like $800, $900 in Australian dollars. So for 2,000, I think it is, yeah. But it's pretty expensive. It's not cheap. It's not cheap at all, but especially in terms of Zambia. But, yeah, I think that, again, it's one of those things where if you have people who you can stay with and you can negotiate with them and say, look, I'm going to stay with you for about six months to a year to give yourself time to adjust, to give yourself time to look for a place. I think that's the best advice that I would give. Do not rush into getting your own place. First, be as settled as you can and know that there's income coming from somewhere and you have the money and you can pay rent on time. Because the other thing is rent is expected 3 months in advance. So you pay, so if it's 2,000 a month, you're paying 6,000 quite upfront for 3 months before you even rent. So that's just an idea of how it works.
Now, for some people that are in the diaspora and they've lived there for years and years and years and have become, you know, accustomed to a certain standard of living that may not be found in Lusaka, and they may go house hunting and it is different. And a lot of people will not be willing to admit that that is one of the fears that they have. You know, that's what keeps them from actually saying, okay, I'm going to pack up my stuff and go home, is the standard of living. They may not be extra wealthy when they're living in the diaspora, but at least they have access to, you know, amenities like, you know, a washing machine and all these other things. And those things are available there. How would you say somebody can cope with that difference? I mean, I know people would think this is a stupid question. Yes, you're Zambian, just go home. You can deal with it. You probably grew up that way. But in reality, a lot of people do not want to take that step because they do think about things like that. What would you have to say?
It's an adjustment. It's always going to be an adjustment. And I think that anybody who decides they want to come back home, that's the one thing that they're just going to have to accept. It's a thought process in itself to come home. But like I said, when you're ready to do it, you're ready to do it, and you accept everything and anything. I think the people who find it the most challenging to come back home and live in Zambia are the people who really weren't ready to. They really did not. Some people, I know people who didn't really have a choice to come back. Either they were deported or for whatever reason, you know, they had to come back. And it's so hard on them because their mindset, their mind has not accepted that this is where they have to live and this is it, basically. They want a higher standard all the time. And that's not to say that when you come to Zambia, you have to just accept mediocrity and accept what's going on. It's just that you have to understand. It's just like going from Zambia to Australia. You're going to accept that if I'm going to go and live in Australia, I'm not going to see Zambians every day. I'm not going to be able to buy Finkubala at the local shopping center or whatever. You know what I mean? Like you've accepted that kind of mindset. So I always kind of laugh that the reverse is never the same. It's so hard. I don't understand why it's so hard for people to then, you know, accept that you accept standard in the diaspora as it is what it is, and I'll accept it and I'll do it. But then when it's when you pivot it to apply it to Zambia or wherever else you're going home to, it's a huge ordeal that you can't manage. Like, you know, people will say, oh my goodness, the roads are terrible, I can't believe I'm living like this, blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, someone will say, oh my goodness, I can't believe I'm taking public transport in Zambia. When we know when you're in Canada or when you're
I think we've lost Mukuka there. Her signal must have gone off, and I'm hoping that we can get her back as soon as we can. Mukuka? Okay, we'll wait until she comes back on. But yes, this is Zambia Block Talk Radio, and we are talking to Mukuka Mayuka, who is in Lusaka, and we are discussing moving back to Zambia. What does that mean? How can somebody do it? What kind of questions you have? And how can you be prepared to do it? Now, if you're listening and you have any questions or comments from Mukuka, the number that you can call is area code 347-237-4270, and you would have to press 1 to have access into the studio. And if you are listening to us via your browser and you have Skype on there, you can just log into your Skype account and then click on the small Skype icon, and that way you can come in with your questions or your comments. And I see in the studio now that we have, you know, lots of regulars from Zambia Block Talk Radio. So I would like to go to Miss Lucas. Miss Lucas, are you there today? Good morning. And what do you think about what Mukuka has said so far?
Thank you. Good morning and good afternoon to you and Mukuka. I hope she'll be back soon. I am highly impressed with the things that are happening on the background, but not so much seen on, you know, on the forefront. The one that really impressed me is the tweeting of the taxi fare or bus fare. That's impressive. I do commend Mukuka for the move that she has made. It's not easy. The people who go home, within a year or two, they are burnt out and they are ready to come back. And when they come back, they swear, I'm not going back. partly because we didn't do our homework 100%, or we relied so much on the promises that we hear from our friends, peers, our family members, and they tell you there's money being made, you have to come, you know, come now. If you don't come now, you won't make money, and people move sometimes on a whim. Others do, you know, take time and invest and do some background checking, but I don't think it's fully extensive. And of course, you won't do your, it won't be 100% because there'll be eye openers, some things you just have to experience for yourself. But being prepared mentally is important.
Thank you, Ms. Lucas. Mukuka, are you back on?
I am.
Oh, okay, great. We lost you there for a minute. So, yes, you were talking about how different it is. You know, it's okay when somebody is moving into the diaspora. People are very willing to accept what the new changes are. But on the way back, in the reverse, people seem to reject it. That's what you were talking about. So how can people deal with it? Just deal with it,
yes,
you know?
Yeah, I think it's so simple for me. I think in the last 8 months, I've really, my mindset has really changed and accepted. Like, for me, I've been someone who's lived away from Zambia for a very long time. I mean, I can hardly remember the places where I lived or I was born. So for me, you can imagine, I'm basically Australian and living in Zambia, I would say. So if I can kind of adjust to it quite easily, then I find it hard to understand how other people find it such an ordeal, or they make it out to be such an ordeal. And as I was saying, like, if you can take public transport in London and then come here and kind of say, I can only drive a car, it's amusing to me. Because it's kind of like you were very willing to take the tube every day to work. And then here, yes, granted, you know, public transport is different, you know, but come on, it's the same, it's still kind of the same mindset. And you do yourself a bigger favor if you just accept that certain things are the way they are. And not to say that once you accept them, then you ignore what's going on. Because, you know, a lot of people say, well, that's basically accepting mediocrity. You know, people in Zambia, they don't care about the roads. We do care about the roads. We do care that there are potholes and things like that. But if I sit around and complain every day and be like, these potholes, you know, that's not going to help me to get from point A to point B. That's not going to help me to get to my meeting. I just have to find a way to get to my meeting and get it done, you know, so that I can... For myself, you have to have a long-term vision. The short-sightedness is what's going to stop you. If the small things, the little things are going to kind of hinder you, then the larger things that come at you are just going to knock you down and just knock you out completely.
So what about, let's talk about banking for a little bit. So you obviously having lived in Australia, you have an Australian bank account, and you've moved to Zambia. Is it easy to open things like bank accounts so you can transfer money so that you're not incurring these, you know, bank fees because you have to use your card overseas? Is this something that you can do whilst you're still abroad, or can this only be done after you are in country?
It's easier to do it when you're in the country. I think Ecobank is the only bank that you can actually set up your account outside of the country, but for the other banks, FNB Zambia, Zenaco, what is the other one? There's another one, I've forgotten the other bank, but in Indico Bank and all of that, them, you would have to be here to set them up. Is it easy? Relatively to Zambia, you have your ID, you go in there, you open a bank account within minutes, especially with FNB. I banked with FNB, they're quite good, but I still had to go through quite a few things because I was considered a foreigner at the time. So you have to have your passport, you have to have your ID, you have to have someone who you live with kind of vouch for the fact that you're staying there, and that you just want to open up a bank account for whatever reason, and that's basically all you have to do. The requirements aren't hectic. It's not so hectic that you can't do it. So I think that again, it's the adjustment. I know a lot of people will be like, oh, my goodness, this entire process is really annoying. I wish I could just open up a bank account. But again, you just have to accept that that's the process. Get it done. You can get it done in a day. And you're kind of done, especially with my bank. So I would have to say shout out to FNB Zambia. They're really, really good. Zenaco, if you want, Zenaco is the most popular one. To me, my only issue with Zenaco is once you go in there, you can be there for like 2-3 hours in line. So it depends on which bank as well you choose. But choose carefully, just depending. Go in there once or twice just to check out how their system and their processes are, and you'll kind of see which bank you want to bank with just by seeing how they work on just in any other day before you open up an account. It will help you out greatly.
So what about, I mean, you've talked about you had a, well, not trouble, but it took a little longer to open your bank account because you were not considered Zambian at the time. And a lot of Zambians that are in the diaspora or Africans in the diaspora may now have passports of the countries where they're living. They're not Zambian anymore. And as you know, you cannot have this dual citizenship in Zambia. And this, of course, is, I'm asking this question with regards to immigration. How can one prepare for immigration? Like, do you prepare, you know, before you're in Zambia? Or do you just have to, you know, arrive and then just start the next day and say, okay, this is what I need to get this done?
Immigration is kind of an interesting place to go to. You will never be fully prepared for it, but the number one thing I think people should do is you go to www.zambiaimmigration.gov.zm. So the Zambian Ministry of Home Affairs, through the Department of Immigration, they kind of regulate the issuance of permits and visas to enter into and leave Zambia. So the place you need to go first of all is the Department of Immigration. So visit that website and you check out the tourism, whether you're coming to Zambia for tourism purposes, business, visiting, whether you're a student, if you need employment permits, self-employment permits, temporary residence permits, permanent permits, that's the website that you go. They've just got a new website, which is fairly, I think it's updated quite regularly, and it does work. I did check it out before I came on today. And yeah, they have their information there. They have news there about what the latest is with any immigration laws. So that's where I went to as well before I even thought about booking my ticket. That's where I went. I found out what visa I needed, and what I needed to do and what I needed to submit. So I kind of had an idea of what I needed before I went. However, what happened when I got to Zambia and the process there is a completely different story altogether, but that's expected.
All right. Well, I would like to just go to the phone lines. I think we have a question or a comment from area code 817, last number is 1615. Please go ahead with your question or your comment for Mukuka.
Hi, Mukuka. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Renate. How are you?
Doing okay. I'm going to be a skeptic here. In your opening remarks, I have two questions. One, you said that when you were back in Australia, there was so much going on. You heard about so much going on in Zambia. Okay. I know you've pointed out one or two things, a few things mentioned, and I would like you've just talked about something that I really wanted also to ask you about, the immigration thing. Now, I want you to point out something that, one or two things that when you got there, it didn't turn out to be that way. Okay, and it completely just threw you off. You've given one example about the immigration thing. I wanted to ask a few issues about immigration, but it wouldn't be fair on you unless I checked with you before the show, if you know what I mean, where I'm coming from. So, one, give an example about this. There's so many things that were going on that when you got down there, it wasn't like that. Then my second question is, address the issue of security. There are all these war fences and a lot of mugging we hear about. I said I was going to be skeptic. Compared to most of where we are living, whether you were in Australia, in Europe, there are no war fences. There are no such huge things with electrified fences. Can you please address those two issues?
Okay, so I'll start off with the immigration. Like, so you're asking me like what kind of hurdles I had with that. Obviously, there's an issue with corruption in Zambia, as we all know. So when you go to the immigration department, depending on who you get, what person you get that day, what you'll be asked to present or what you think you need to present might not be the case. Someone might give you a hard time just because they think, okay, you're coming from Australia and you're trying to come back to Zambia and you've had it easy. And I had that experience where it was very, very difficult for me to kind of go through that process. So I had it's taken me about a good 6 months to get my immigration stuff on the right track. It's not even sorted yet. It's like just on the right track. So for me, that's one issue, but I wouldn't say that that's everybody's experience. It's just my experience, and I can understand why people would be skeptical, but again, like I would point out, it's my experience. Immigration is never easy. I know in Australia it's very, very difficult to get your permanent residency, and that's the only reason why I kind of accepted what's going on with Zambian immigration, is that it's not easy to get permanent residency. If it was the other way around, if a Zambian was trying to come into Australia, I know Zambian Australians who had to wait 5 years for their permanent residency. And for me to wait about six, seven months, I think on the scale of things, it's quite fair or easier than people would think. So it's not, I think we expect things to be easier because we're Zambian and we know, and we're coming from the diaspora, and things should just be, the process should be simple. But again, you have to realize if it was the other way around, you know yourself, to get a green card is not easy. To get into England, it's not easy. To get into any country, it's not easy for permanent residency. I think the issue with Zambia is that there is corruption a little bit and makes it more difficult to get what you want. So that I can admit to you that yes, it was difficult in terms of dealing with certain officers. But other than that, I think that the experience has been getting better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Security,
again, I think it depends on which neighborhood you live in. Yes, you've got your wall fences, and yes, you do have people, you know, you have the street kids mugging you in town and things like that. That's always a concern, and, you know, you will be told, you know, be careful. I would say I'm pretty lucky. I have not had any terrible, terrible experiences. I have had, you know, I have been witness to someone's the cars for the tire being stolen in the middle of the night. That has happened, I will admit. I know someone who's been, their purse has been stolen in town. So those things do happen, but I haven't heard of a home invasion yet. I think it depends on what area you live, how you have security in your home, and how that happens and all of that. But it's the same thing, again, in the diaspora. It depends on where you live. I mean, there's more crime in some areas and less crime in others.
Mm-hmm. I hope that answers your question, Mr. Nathan.
Yes, in a way.
All right. Thank you so much for calling
in.
Go ahead.
I'm saying I'm avoiding to put too much pressure on her.
I'm sure she appreciates it. So I would just like to go to the other, I mean, there's lots of questions that are coming in. I would like to just go straight to Canada. Mr. Charlie, are you there? Please go ahead with your question quickly for Mukuka. We're running out of time and we have a lot of people with lots of questions.
Yes, thank you, Tombo, and thank you, Mukuka. I think one of your explanations here is quite emotional, I would say, and that is of family. My first question is, your decision to go back to Zambia, how much was it affected by you having born in Zambia, having known some of the people in Zambia, and thinking you are going to miss or lose out on those people? How much did that affect you? And then your point that you, only your brothers and your mother were in Australia. Those were probably the only people you knew. And I'm wondering, you know, for my son, Nathan's children, we may only be the family that they know. How concerned should we be as members of the diaspora that we may just have children who may not have a place to go home?
Okay. So first, my family being here in Zambia was a big motivating factor for me to come back. And I've said it before. I mean, I love Australia. I love living there. My family was there, and again, I was part of the Zambian community. They were part of the Zambian community. My mom's friends, and they were. I called them aunts and uncles. I'd grown up with them. Their kids were kind of like my cousins or brothers and sisters and things like that. But at the end of the day, it's just a very different experience when you're back in Zambia and you have people who look like you, who know you, known you since you were five, who can tell you stories about your mom and, you know, people who are your family, people who you can see that, oh, that's a Mayuka, that's a Chombe from my mom's side, you know, or sitting down with my grandma. And one of the first things I did when I came back was I sat down with my grandma, and she was telling me stories about the day I was born, and we were laughing, and, you know, we were talking and things like that, and I missed that. And it's those things that I wanted to have. You know, in Australia, I would see my friends go and visit their grandmas and grandpas at their old age homes and things like that. And that made me sad. So I thought to myself, if I came home, the other thing is, if I came home, in Australia, I didn't want to put my mom and my dad in an old age home. That's not what I want. I would rather come home, build a house or buy a house, and then bring them back to Zambia. And then have people look after them here, family. Let my family help me to look after them, just like my grandma and my grandpa are looked after by the whole family over here. It's very sad for me to see parents being put in homes. That, to me, is something that I couldn't even fathom with my mom and my dad. And then again, you know, I just feel like even though it's just me, my brother and myself, you know, in Australia, if and my parents had passed on, you know, it just felt really alone and just a lonely existence for me. I just thought I'd rather be around family. So that was a very big concern to me. How concerned should you and Ranason be? I mean, it's a personal choice. I think your children, they might not have the connection to Zambia that I have. I've always been connected to Zambia because my aunts and my uncles have called me through every birthday, every graduation. They've been writing letters to me since I was five. They've been emailing since emails were popular. They could call me, and they would call me even when phone calls were expensive. So I've always had this really, really good relationship with my family. So for me, my mom and my mom's sisters and her brothers and my dad's brothers and his sisters, I mean, they've always loved me from afar, and I've always felt like they've been pulling me home to say, come home and be with us. And that's been my pull. I mean, if your kids don't have that relationship with their country or your relatives, then they might not feel like they're missing out on anything. They'll be quite happy to live in America or Canada or wherever and live there and have their families there. So for them, it's very different. It's a very personal decision to decide to come home for yourself and for your kids. So I wouldn't say you should be concerned. I think you should just sit down with your children and ask them what they would like to do, how they see their future.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Charlie, does that answer your question?
Okay. Yeah, like Rasan, I would say it does to a certain extent. Knowing some of our traditions, some of our cultures are passed from family to family. And if we break that link between my children and...
I seem to have lost Mr. Charlie there, but he will come back on, I'm sure, in a little bit. I would like to go on to some more questions and comments, and I'm hoping that Mukuka will be back on by that time. But I will just go ahead and bring you on so you can go ahead and have your comment or your question. Area code 612, last numbers 5190. Please go ahead with your question or your comment.
Thanks for the honor, Mukuka.
Sorry, Twambo. Twambo, you can't hear?
Okay, we can hear you now.
Hello, Twambo.
Okay,
can you hear
sorry.
Me?
Okay,
yes.
Titus can go ahead, but I'm surprised. I don't know what happened.
Okay, so please go ahead with your question, Titus.
Okay, I think I have two questions, short ones anyway. One is a comment. I think when we're asking Mukuka, we have to be ready, and I can just suggest that I think we need to gather people that have gone to Zambia. Either they're currently in Zambia experiencing whatever, I think there's need for them to get together if there's a way with this social media, how they can get together and try to see what they can do, because they're in the same position, same hardships and stuff like that. Maybe their choice is they cannot go back wherever they came from. There's a certain group that is on that case. So I think Mukuka should be able to address that separately from people that have a choice where they can come in and they've heard these stories, they've tried, it's hard, whatever. They say, okay, I'm again packing up and going back. Maybe they will say a comment of I'm never coming back or things like that. But everybody, like Mukuka is saying, I think everybody has a different perspective of how you have the support system in Zambia. Let us remember also that in the diaspora, this is why it's very important to make sure that your links are okay with the family back home,
mm-hmm.
as you are whatever in the diaspora. Because sometimes this is what breaks the link, where somebody feels all pompous being in the West, wherever you are, that you don't have to live the Zambian life, whatever. But sometimes, whether it's deportation or whatever, you might get back. There's a statement in Zambia that in Bemba almost, I don't know if I can catch up with it. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The way that people talk when they're outside and then when they come back, the people are now there to laugh at you because they heard how you talked from the diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another challenge that people are having, and maybe that's why we're having difficulty in terms of people trying to help me out. If you heard me talking bad about the Zambian, like maybe they can think or they cannot do this, can't patch up a pothole. Now I come back and I need help on, well, my car, there's too many potholes. They'll just tell you, shut up, you're complaining too much. We're living with the potholes. Just focus on what you wanted to do and ask the questions. There'll be challenges. It's never going to be polished up the way we want it.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, is the children that we have. I have children that can be also called maybe half and half. You know, they're American. I'm Zambian myself. It's my duty to either teach them up to the Tonga because I'm a Tonga person.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I didn't do my homework. My daughter is all over in the news and whatever. She does not know any much of Tonga. So it's my fault. If I taught her, then she has a big spectrum of the, you know, the support group that can speak whatever they pick from that, try to advise and stuff like that if she wants to go there. I've talked to my daughter. I have some land in Zambia. I said, you know what, I'll keep some land for you. And if you want to sell it, that'll be on you. If you want to go to Zambia and do whatever you want to do to empower yourself, that is on you also. My job is to make sure that you have two choices and you break it yourself.
Okay. Well, Titus, we're running a little bit out of time, and there's a few more questions that you have. So I just wanted to say thank you so much for your comments, and I would just like to go on to the next question. We have another question or a comment from area code 913, last numbers 2282. Please go ahead quickly with your question or your comment for Mukuka.
I'm not going to ask a question. My name is Zebron. I'll just comment since you guys are almost out of time. I wanted to go back to Vanepan. Talking about Zambia having challenges of like both Matika and security and immigration. What I wanted to say is that so first of all, I want to thank you, Mukuka, for this, because to some of us, this is more like just a dead stamp. If we had like doubts about going back to Zambia and setting up some businesses, because what I would say is that Zambia has its own challenges, just like the diaspora, you know. You know, there may be like some security challenges where, you know, offenses, security defenses, it's just like what challenges that we have. Even here in America or Australia, you know, it has its own challenges too. Like the legal challenges there, if you just mess up just a single thing on your business, if you try to set up a business here, just you mess up just one thing, someone could sue you and get your whole money in just a second, just like that, which is not that common in Zambia. So, I mean, Zambia and the diaspora has its own challenges. And then on the immigration part, what I'd say is that most of the people that want to go back and invest in Zambia that come here, I mean, I don't know about the Australian immigration, but here, like in America, I mean, for most of the people, they'd want to wait until the dual citizenship is in place. In the meantime, they'd want to keep their green card. Like, they want to be on green card because some of them think it's a big hassle to go to Zambia when they're American citizens and start setting up businesses there when they're in Zambia. They have so many issues because you have to pay this one or Mudesa more, and then you can't stay there for a certain time until you're on, like, on a business visa, which you have to pay extra more money than and get you a Zambian. So, I mean, people try just to plan ahead. If they really want to go back to Zambia, come here, get education, get some resources, and go back to Zambia, some of them would rather just stay on, like, a green card. They can renew it every 10 years. I don't know how that works, but they'd want to keep their Zambian citizenship because at a certain time, they can go to Zambia, even if they're still American residents, go set up a business, live there, come back here, and still go back to Zambia and do their thing. So, shortly, that's just all that I wanted to comment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you for coming on the show. Mukuka, what are your thoughts about that? People, you know, feeling this sense of security in having their papers from whatever country that they have in the diaspora. And like he said, you know, there's no dual citizenship yet. And, yeah, it is just a sense of security to stay where you are. But is it a false sense of security? Mm-hmm. You know, because at the end, when you get older and you don't have any family with you and all these things. What are your thoughts about that?
I mean, for me, I'll be honest. Like, I'm not giving up my Australian passport. I'm not giving up my Australian citizenship, but I will get my Zambian permanent residency. I mean, I think it's just important to be realistic as well. It's about a thing of having options as well as security. So for me, I have the option of, you know, keeping my citizenship and also getting permanent residency to live and work in Zambia. And I think that's your right and prerogative. I'm a Zambian. I was born in Zambia, and that's my right. I can live here, and I should be able to live here. But if you've gone to the diaspora and you've gotten your papers legally and everything, you should also have the right to keep your papers and have that security. It's really up to, nobody's saying that you have to give up your green papers and things like that. It's just a matter, because you can still have your citizenship and then have permanent residency in Zambia if that's what you wanted. So yes, you can have everyone says it's the best of both worlds, but if that's what works for you, then go ahead and do that. But I think just to wind up, you know, everybody has to consider that it is a very personal choice. It's not necessarily one that will work for Baroja or work with for Ranathan. It might not work for you, Trumbo. It might work for me. It might not work for me. I'm still here. In 2 years, I might just say, you know what, Chapo, nah, Naka, I'm going back. You know what I mean? That's what could happen. However, as it stands for me now, the decision has worked out well enough. I'm still here. You know, I have my struggles and things like that, especially with the kwacha depreciating and all of that. But it really is a personal decision, and you only really want to make it when you're ready to. There will be nothing like I've researched every single thing and then I'm ready. You just wake up one day and you just say, I want to go home, and then you book your ticket and you'll be here. That's all that. You just do it. And I think that's the same thing with anything in your life. When you're ready to do something, you take the leap of faith and you just do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, one last thing before we go, Mukuka. Titus had mentioned, you know, people that have moved back to Zambia sort of congregating and sort of a support group of saying, oh, this is what I'm going through and this is what is happening for me, and I'm working on this type of business. Is there something like that that is available right now? I mean, I know that there's something called Startup Junction that is going where people can come and talk about their businesses. And there was also recently, Nathan had on his show somebody that was organizing an event for people to come back to Zambia, people that had gone back to Zambia and sort of talking about their experiences. Mm-hmm. Would you say that there's a regular support group? Is this something that is, you know, available, or is this something that we have to vote for you to go and begin in Lusaka?
I don't think you really need a support group. I think you meet people who are like-minded. I think that's what it is. I think that's I think what I like about Zambia is you meet people, especially in Lusaka. Lusaka is so small. You eventually bump into someone who's, you know, one of the diaspora darlings, come back home and you sit down and you chat with them. And, you know, you have those discussions with them and you see that they've kind of gone through the same things as you. They know what you're struggling through. And those are the people who've kind of helped me in the last 8 months to kind of get through a lot of stuff. So they've kind of said to me, don't worry about immigration. It's going to work out. Don't worry about this. It's going to work out. So it's not necessarily a support group. It's just meeting people and getting to know people who understand where you're coming from. And I think if you know one person, and I would always say this to the Zambia Blog Talk Radio family, if any of you decide to come home, please look me up. I'll always be around and always be available to talk to chat to introduce you to other people that I know who would help you. I think that's the one good thing about people coming home is that it should be a bridge between Zambia and the diaspora. So for me, I feel like I'm here to help out anybody else from the Zambia Blog Talk Radio who's in the diaspora who wants to come home. Email me, tweet me. I think my Twitter is at Ms. KKJ, you know, and say, look, I'm home. I'm in Lusaka. I met Matilda last year. She came for an event that my client was hosting. I've met Ms. Walia. She came through, and we've had a discussion about, you know, Zambia and living here and all of that stuff. So anybody who really would want to do the same thing, I'm always around.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to Diaspora and Truth. That was the show. Thank you, Mukuka, for always being willing to come and talk to us about your experience with moving back on and for being such a great example. We really, really appreciate it. And the next time we have more questions, we hope that we can have you back on to, you know, come and answer them and sort of help us into the transition. So I would like to just
no problem anytime. Have a good weekend.
Yes, thank you. You have a good weekend.
Before she goes, Ms. Twambo, I think Kuka, you were on the show when we did a discussion with the guys from Ghana. This is one thing you may have to consider doing. Maybe setting up a desk, which will be probably as an information service. For the members of the diaspora, those looking for accommodation and stuff, and when they are coming, since you know you've experienced both ends of the world, you stand a better chance to be a bridge. I'm just seeing an opportunity here. If you want a partner, I'm here.
Okay, no problem, my Roger. We can talk offline.
We will. It's something you should consider.
Okay, so that was Diaspora and Truth. Thank you so much to everybody that tuned in. We really appreciate it. Please go ahead and like us on Facebook. We are under Zambia Blog Talk Radio. Please visit our website, zambiablogtalkradio.com. We appreciate your support. We appreciate you listening to us every week. And I would just like to let you know what is coming up on Open Forum, the next program with Mr. Chali, and they will be discussing this week in Zambia and around the world. So thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. Please stay tuned for the next program. Thank you.
Hey, Wena, so keep a ninny last year.
Good morning and welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio. Johnny Craig with Asabonanga. Where are you, Mandela? We've been looking for you. This is Zambia Block Talk Radio. Open forum. My name is Roger again in Okotox. The weather has changed. Last Saturday I was here. It was all nice and sunny outside. Now we are back in minus something. I don't know whether it's Titus who's bringing this kind of weather from Minnesota. I am not sure, but certainly things are happening. Welcome for joining us again on this wonderful show. Yesterday was my wife's birthday, and we went for dinner, and I was talking to her. The reason why every day I look forward to Saturday, sit on the radio, it gives me a sense of a breather, so to say. A lot of frustrations from home, in as far as politics are concerned. I'm a political guy, American politics, politics around the world. And when I come here, I have to listen to Dr. Patrick, you know, just cool me down. No, there's no need for you to go hang yourself. Everything will be all right. So it gives me another week to look forward to another week. So I love to do what I do. Those who join us every week, I think that's the reason we come. You know, it gives us that a release of pressure. All right. So let's go into it. Before we go to Zambia, what has been happening around the world? One time I spoke about how the provincial governments here in Canada are very, very strong, sometimes stronger than the federal government. Well, here in Alberta, the premier had to resign. Alison Redford was the first female premier in the province. She only served for 2 years. She resigned because she spent $45,000 to go to Nelson Mandela's funeral. The people didn't understand the justification. I read through the papers. Part of it, she booked a plane from here to Ottawa to join the Prime Minister. And that the private plane, which is government plane, was actually $15,000. And amongst that were, you know, her staff and this and this. And for $45,000, she was under so much pressure, she had to quit. And I'm like, whoa, only if our politicians back home could quit for their travel expenses. Our president just went for a wedding the other day. Taxpayers don't even know how much was spent. He can go anywhere he wants. I think this is some kind of accountability we should be seeking. So that is news. From Alberta, we continue looking, praying for our friends Malaysia and China as they look for the missing plane. A discussion with my 16-year-old son yesterday, he's like, "Dad, people don't just go missing like that. You know, 300 people just go missing in thin air. People don't even know where they have gone. It is unheard of." And I thought that was quite revealing what the relatives are going through. They may understand. They may know their relatives are dead and gone. But there should be some form of closure somewhere where you say, okay, here it happened over here and people have died. People don't just go missing like that. So we feel the pain, I think, of our our fellow people in Malaysia. There's been a lot of jokes on Facebook how this plane has been found in Saudi Arabia in the garden. It is somebody who stole it. Someone has posted a picture. This plane has been found in Lusaka by a copper thief. I think all this is just explaining the mystery of mankind, where we don't just disappear like that. I think that is the way those jokes are being directed to. So we continue to think about our friends in Malaysia. We hope some kind of closure can be found. And lastly, in Ukraine, what we are seeing again is the Obama administration was under very intense pressure from Republicans. How weak Obama is, how is this and this, he has failed to react. But for the first time yesterday, the markets in Russia almost crashed because of the sanctions which are being passed by the Obama administration. A lot of people are worried in Russia today. They say Obama people have the formula. They gave to the Iranians, which made the Iranians to kneel down. Without firing a shot, the Iranians have come to senses they can be crippled. And the businessmen in Russia are thinking the same can happen to them if Obama continues. So Obama continues to be this one guy who looks so silent, and yet he can do a lot of damage to you. Dr. Patrick will possibly comment, I think, on those or any one of those. Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning, Dr. Patrick.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. As you can hear, my voice, as always, has a lot of energy in it. Any
yes.
comments on any one of... the items I reiterated around the world before we go to Zambia?
Okay, let's begin with the resignation in Alberta. What is needed, or what one need to look at, is the Constitution. There should be somewhere in the Constitution the misappropriation of funds. And if there is a legal aspect to the misappropriation of funds written in the Constitution, then one can call for the resignation of a political person, whether it's in the upper house or lower house. So that has to do with the Constitution and the resignation in Alberta. With the Constitution in Zambia, if we have that type of legal aspect, whereas we can address the misappropriation of funds, and under the misappropriation of funds is travel without authority, then one can ask for a similar resignation. With respect to Malaysia and the plane disappearing in Malaysia, there are so many security pieces in the air around Malaysia, and that's the defense security pieces in which one country would not like to share the extent of their security, air security, and that makes it very
yeah.
difficult for one country to get involved. Malaysia has the lead, and they have to ask for the United States, China, Australia to intervene in certain aspects or certain parts of the investigation. So that's why it's so difficult to get a handle on what happened. But I'm sure that eventually there'll be some meeting of the minds in which the countries will join together to find that missing plane. With respect to the Ukraine, you spoke of President Obama, but we should also in the same voice speak of the EU.
That's correct.
For the first time in the history since the Cold War, President Obama, and no other presidents before him, is using economic sanctions as opposed to military intervention. the economic sanctions, which you so rightly stated, was used in Iran with the assistance and cooperation and partnership of the EU. That pushed the Iranians to the discussion, to the negotiation table. It is again being used by President Obama in on Russia. And there is three executive orders that were signed by President Obama that we all should be conscious of. The first executive order allowed President Obama to apply 11 sanctions against individuals in Russia with their incursion into the Ukraine. The second one, which was just recently issued, included not only five more, or I think it was 20 more individual sanctions that included personal friends and business associates of President Putin. They also included a business, which is Rosneft, which is the 17th largest bank in Russia. Now, it's not the first largest bank, it's the 17th. But what's important about this particular bank is the personal bank of President Vladimir Putin, as well as the elite of the elite Russian business magnates. And he also, President Obama, also applied sanctions on two individuals that are also closely associated with President Putin. These two individuals are construction magnates. They are billionaires, and they are also wrestling partners to President Putin. So these sanctions are directly towards and for President Putin to give him notice that we should be very, very careful, or he should be very, very careful of continuing his aggression on the Ukraine. At the same time, we should also mention that the EU added additional sanctions to individuals, bringing their sanctions up to 30. So 30 individuals by the EU and approximately 30 individuals by the United States, all against Russia for their military intervention. And finally, one more point about the executive order. I mentioned that President Obama signed two executive orders, but he also signed the third one. And the third one goes directly to the businesses. And if Russia continued to move into the Ukraine,
yeah,
this third one is more devastating. If everyone would recall or know about a recent agreement between Exxon, which is the multi-corporation in the United States, and there is Rosneft, there's a even larger oil corporation in Russia. They recently signed an agreement to export or excavate, look for oil in the South Pole region. If President Obama nixes this deal, that would hurt Russia tremendously. And you're talking about their stock exchange dropping, it would just plummet through the ceiling, and I mean through the floor. So this is the situation with respect to the Ukraine. And as many news people would say, stay on this page because there's more to come.
Stay on this
but
page.
We must congratulate President Obama for taking the economic sanctions route as opposed to the military intervention route.
Well, and the military route, no one expects really the United States throughout the other presidents to attack Russia or begin a war. And therefore, I think everyone is now surprised how Obama is being the first president to have taken it to the Russians in this way, which could even be more devastating. Now, Dr. Patrick, very, very quickly on the same subject, what we are hearing from the Europeans, they are saying that they may be starting to look for other sources of oil than depending on Russia. Do you think President Putin and maybe even other countries like China, this coming of power, we underestimate the power of the connectivity which we may have in the 21st century way of economics, the way we are interconnected? Are we do we underestimate how we are connected?
I don't think so. I think there is two things revolving and bumping against each other as we proceed. One is the geopolitics that are involved, and the other is the multinational economic politics that are involved. If we look at the geopolitics, the United States and the EU has been slowly but surely over the last 10 or 15 years been moving closer and closer to the borders of Russia.
Of Russia. Not to cut you short, I think I want you to connect my question to what happened to Iran after what happened.
Okay.
It's like everyone was surprised, including the Iranians themselves. They're like, whoa, what is now happening? It's like people didn't know these things could happen to them, and now people are waking up.
Oh, yes. The connectivity between those two is that if you're used to going to the store and purchasing a dozen of eggs for $3, and now with the economic sanction, you're now going to buy those dozens of eggs for $10, that's going to bring your attention directly to what your government is doing.
To the people. Okay.
Yes.
We've chewed up a little bit of time. Let's end there. But you know how much I look forward to some of these discussions. I think they require two hours sometimes. But let's go to Zambia. Thank you, Dr. Patrick. Let's go to Zambia and see what is happening there. Before we look at the Kwacha, the devastation of our own currency, which we are talking about. Bloomberg was reporting last week, Kwacha was the worst performing currency in the world after the Yuna. The Yuna is a currency from Ukraine. After the Yuna, Kwacha was the most depreciated currency. We are going to look at that, what Akainde Ichilema is suggesting to the Zambian government to do. Whether they've done enough, that now that they have reversed some of the things which contributed to the downfall of the Kwacha. What about the other elements which are remaining? That is going to be the question to the people who are here with me. But let's look at some of the reports. From George Compound in Lusaka, we have 90 children who were admitted to the hospital there because of food poisoning. I thought that was sad. I don't know what kind of food they ate, but it hasn't been reported in Zambia Weekly. In Choma, where I don't know if my good friend Titus here is anywhere close to Choma, we have a case of gang rape. A 15-year-old child was raped by three individuals. You know, forcefully took her to the house. Right now, she's laying in Choma General Hospital, and we hope justice can be passed to these three individuals for doing this. We've seen very disturbing reports come from India with these gang rape issues. I hope this we can stop it as quickly as possible. Another report from Lusaka, the Minister of Agriculture and Tourism, Sylvia Matebo, was fired last week. That also happened. It is another, I don't know, them and their Lusaka. What can we say? What is new of the government? I think this is good news. The government has reinstated the nurses they fired. That was about last year. They fired all the nurses at UTH, but now we are hearing reports government is going to reinstate all of them, 500 of them. I wish we had people who could do some research, find out this 1 year what has been happening, because a lot of bad things have happened in Zambia. I also read a report, Nathan, of the mortuary, the way it stinks in our mortuary in Zambia. You would not believe that the people who are being taken to those mortuaries had loved ones before, and yet when you go there, you find rotting corpses, stuff like that. I don't know, in our own small way, small power, we may have small influence. We could pass this information. This is not good, what is happening in most of our general hospitals in Zambia, where you find corpses just lying around the hospital. And then finally, also, Dr. Patrick, we talked about it last week. I like what Dr. Sasa is saying here about the reshuffles our government keeps on making. And this is a statement which he made, and anyone can possibly comment on it. This is the summary. Sasa says, when you keep on changing the ministers, when you keep on changing the permanent secretaries, you are now neither permanent nor secretaries. They are people who have developed rapport with those individuals. We'll start to say that, but I have to always start explaining to the same officers the same story to different people. I thought, Nathan, this was one element we may not see. When people are changing every month, so what does it mean when a deal is being finalized, or finalizing a deal, and those people are reshuffled? So you go again, you start explaining the same thing to different people. That means you are beginning all over again and all over again. So in the past 2 years or so, some ministries with 5 reshuffles. Can you imagine, Nathan, how much explaining you have to do to 5 different ministers?
I know. Good morning, my friend. It's
yes, good morning.
I was telling you that I was talking to somebody, and that is the challenge of political appointments. You are at the mercy of the appointing authority or power, so to speak, in this case, with the Republican president. But continuity means a lot. It means a person sort of invests their style of leadership and way of doing things in a particular ministry. You can't run away from the fact that the person on top creates a certain culture, atmosphere, and things like that. But I don't know why the president is doing this. It's a little bit baffling. Roger, I don't know.
You have to make your comment on this. We talked about it last week, but I like what Sasa here is saying. If you are making a deal, every institution you can think of, you know, you have to create some what they call a network. But if that network keeps changing every in some ministries that has changed five times, how are you going to do business with that ministry?
I can't comment much. All I can remind people is that some of these changes they might just be frequent nowadays. They started from even Kaunda, when people would move to a department that you may even be aware that I think this minister is not even, the portfolio he has nothing to do with agriculture or fisheries, but I don't know. That's why I strongly feel like unless he starts moving permanent secretaries a lot, I believe that the people that are doing the engine are the permanent secretaries. And so when they move you, it's a temporary, I move you this side and that. So whether you're not competent, you're just carrying out this thing of
Sasha, the bias. I want to cut you short. Not to cut you short, Titus. Last week you said it only matters if the people who are being moved around are permanent secretaries. But on Friday or Thursday, there was a reshuffle, and that reshuffle affected permanent secretaries.
Yeah, but then look at the competence of them. I'm not trying to serve anybody. I'm just saying you can move permanent secretaries, but let's say if they move, look at, I'll give an example of Honorable Kichinga. The first move was, that doesn't make sense, but the second move kind of makes sense because this field is commerce and industry. So when you work to agriculture, I don't know, maybe has that background. So some permanent
all you need to do is to on he was doing business with, tell them that, oh, guys, I'm back. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, let's go to our main discussion today, and this is going to be on the Kwacha, the depreciation of the Kwacha. We have seen a massive depreciation of the Kwacha. I think I may have to close Nathan giving us feedback. The Kwacha, which has really gone AY, and Hichilema outlined three things which I would like the panel here, Zebron, thank you for staying with us. One of it was instrument number 33 and 55, and I have a small business in Zambia, and I know what those instruments, what they are doing to most companies. If you want to send back your money, say for instance I sell something and I want that money to go back, I have to prove to the Bank of Zambia why I'm doing that, why I want that money. Before I could just send the lady in Lusaka, she goes, makes application, they send whatever they have to send. But now I have to find a reason why that money has to come to the bank here. For instance, you may have to lie. You have to come up with a quotation and say, this company wants the money here, so send it. So if you don't have a company, then they won't send that money if they are sending to an individual, if it's more than $5,000. So that was what instrument 33 and 55. It was really an inconvenience to the company. They had to explain themselves, so to say, for them to have their money. And Haka Inde Ichilema says, you have to drop that. That has dropped the confidence in business. And therefore, on Friday, the minister had to drop it. Haka Inde also talked about the promise to deliver a people-driven constitution. When you do what you are doing as government, you are taking away confidence in the economy, in the politics. Now, politics control economy. So if you cannot stand on what you promised, what else are you going to deny the Zambian people on? And Haka Inde is explaining that the constitution, the night delivery of the constitution, and the impending troubles that can bring, it is also affecting the Kwacha. And then finally, he also talks about the denying of opposition members of parliament, the freedom of expression. These things are affecting the Kwacha. Well, to all those things Haka Inde talked about, the only reversed one. Zebron, I'll come back to you. Let me go to Dr. Patrick. With these three things I've outlined, Dr. Patrick, government have reversed on one. Will this be enough to the business to business people, or now they have dig themselves so much in the trench, they may have to deliver more than just reversing one bad aspect of the law of money in Zambia?
I think it is that, and it's also tied to the United States dollar. The economic systems, the finance ministers in Zambia, and in collaboration with the World Bank and in collaboration with the Federal Reserve chairperson here in the United States, there are various systems. There are fixed systems and there are floating currency systems. And then there is a combination of both. Zambia is on a fixed currency system with the idea of moving to a floating currency system. So it's in between. Now, it would only work if there is cooperation with the overall financial exchange systems globally. If the copper magnates in Zambia is not in agreement with the kwacha being changed, then the financial magnates, through their global interests, can make a kwacha drop from in 2013 to now, presently 2014, it can drop 15%. And that, in effect, would damage the economic system. So there are various players very much involved in the kwacha outside of the president and his administration. So it is pretty rough, but the famous saying is follow the money, go where the money is. I would look at the copper concerns in Zambia. I would also look at the infusion of money coming in from China. And I would also look at the major supermarkets that are sprouting across Zambia, and we would combine those, but mainly the copper interests, and we would combine those to look at why the monies are fluctuating. Just to look at the overall picture of what we talked about earlier about Iran and Russia, well, it's as a microcosm, we could look at Zambia in the sense that economic sanctions that are being pressed upon Zambia, not from the president, but from the major interests that are going and that are within Zambia, and I'm looking at copper.
Okay. Dr. Patrick, the State House, if they are listening this morning, they'll be very, very happy to hear that. Most of us Zambians think, however,
if we had time, I would like to talk about food poisoning and the High Court overruling on President Sata.
Okay, when we have time. Okay, we will definitely go to that. As a Zambian, Zebron, how much do you agree with what Hichilema is saying here, not doing what he promised, the all impending now situation around the constitution, all these things could be bringing pressure to our currency. It may have started with one item, that is 3 and 55, those Bank of Zambia Act or whatever they are. But now other things may have come into because of bad politics in our country. Zebra.
Yes, I think it's. Thank you so much. And
Are you on speaker, Zebron? Sorry.
Let me take it off the speaker. Matter of fact, let me take it. Just give me a second.
It makes that sound. Yeah.
Okay. Am I good now?
Yes. Excellent.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I want to thank the doctor. He's a very smart man. I've already learned a lot from him. Thank you so much, doctor. You know what? For me, why our dollar is being so unstable immediately after the new government has taken control is I don't know, though, if we have any economic sanctions on Zambia. I don't know if I hope they doesn't mistake Zambia with Zimbabwe. But it could be because of what our government may be doing, like what Zambian government is used of doing. Because usually once a new government takes over, that's my opinion. Now that they know that Sata and his government is not really liked by the people, they know that they may not be able to win another term in office. In my opinion, I think there's some kind of misappropriation going on somewhere. You know what I'm saying? That is really affecting the dollar. It could be some misappropriation somewhere. Someone is getting the resources and someone is not doing their job right. It could be like someone is getting money somewhere. If you go back, we didn't even know that President Chiluba way back got so much money from the government without even the knowledge of Zambians. It could be the same happening right now because people know that they may not come back again next year. And then also the Constitution, thing about the Constitution, it could have any effect, though I don't think the Constitution could have much on the effect on the currency, though, because why I'm saying that is because it's cool, but not mad. But I just think that I know I haven't really been what the minister announced is it yesterday about the 33 and 55. I'm not really much into finance, but I know it just could be something to do with misappropriation. Someone trying to get the money, saving their money just in case they don't come back, and it's really affecting the economy. So this could be my check, though. So. Yeah.
Okay.
And I know
okay.
It could be some.
Okay. Well said. Titus, the question on the table: how much do you think the politics in Zambia are affecting the dollar? Some of you, when you come into, let's not forget the amount of borrowing which has been this government are doing. Borrowing is never good, especially a country which does not hold the reserve currency like the United States, which can only put, print money, so to say, to offset the borrowing. We can't do that. We don't have the reserve currency. But how much of all these things happening is as a result of politics, or do you agree with Dr. Pat here, which probably is like State House position, like it's because of the Kwacha, but we are the worst performing beyond any other country. Titus,
I think I second with Dr. Patrick's remarks, but also I can also comment that of course whatever is going on with Zambia, the first thing that investors are looking at is the power at which they can invest in Zambia. And then probably even a way of getting that money out. I mean, they don't come in to invest in Zambia and just develop Zambia and that's it. You know, an investor has his own mind. He might want to do both at the same time. Actually, that's one of the things. They don't mind developing Zambia, but they have to carry out their goal. If it's ending up developing where they are from, they got to be able to do that. So if the political climate is not good, all these public order acts that are going on, it sensitizes them in terms of if money is moving around there, whether you're making money now, you'll be thinking, how do you get it out? Mm. And if there's a coup, all these failed governments, that's the first thing people check. It's the coordination, it's the government. So as much as somebody can incline themselves with the ruling government of today, they would also be watching, can they lose grip of the governance? And if I feel, if it's possible, then it shakes me on my comfortability of investing more or, expanding. I might start looking at, is there any other country around here where I am? I'm already in Southern Central Africa. How about Botswana? How about Malawi? The country is performing good. Somebody might say, this model can work in this other country where I feel more comfortable because it's going a different way. So I strongly know and feel politics are also an issue. So We should be careful what we do.
Okay. I agree with that. Brother Daniel Tsewe in Pennsylvania. Any thoughts on this issue, on the loss of the Kwacha? The general trend, I must say, and agreeing with Dr. Patrick here, is that now that the U.S. economy is stabilizing, the Federal Reserve is buying back the dollar. They are making it a little bit more expensive to the outside, and it has affected a lot of countries, Canada included, but it is not at the same rate as our nation, the way it has been affected. So I agree, the buying back of the dollar by the Reserve is affecting a lot of currencies around the world, but not at the rate our Kwacha has been going. Sometimes in a day it has lost 2 points or so within a day. That is way beyond what should be happening to any currency. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Roger, for this opportunity. I can throw my two cents in. About credit, I can't think of a good example real fast, but let me just try this. I've been around small business in this part of the world, and I don't know if you have seen the 12 years of slavery. The guy.
Maybe
the
way, I'll go see today. Actually, yes.
Yeah, he was talking about I mean, it's a very poor example, and I'm sorry, you know, I don't want to offend that because it's a very sensitive part, but I can't think of something. The way he was making people work hard because he had debt to pay, you know. And same here, our friends, these are white people, sometimes they borrow from the parents, and they borrow from the bank. And when they get to work, and they sometimes they say, guys, you know, they make sure you work overtime. Sometimes, you know, things break down and you guys have just been there working, paying debt. And if the debtor sees that, you know, at least he sees that you are trying. Then if the debtor came in and he finds that you borrowed money and you are driving and in a very nice car, and it's almost like you're not caring about paying that debt back, you know. And the same person sometimes maybe who lended you money, it's easy to see how you're working and say, okay, We want to invest, you know. Some friends of mine came in because you know, the company was doing bad, and said, "Oh, someone else wants to invest in this. That's a good thing, you know, because the guys, the things they were breaking, but he was hard, you know, hard it. This is the boss, you know. You think he's not the boss. I think that part sometimes maybe I don't want to offend Zambians are very hardworking people, but sometimes the management, the government. The way they do things, it's almost like when the debtor sees us, they don't see like we are paying attention. And when it comes to explain how the money, you know, the bosses are not there, like, you know, or they have to explain where the money is going and why we are the way we are, you know. That's what I can say for right now, Roger. Let other people with finance experience and it's teaching me a lot to be in a small business, Roger. When people see that you are trying, they will come to you, you know. They will say, you know, they might even forgive you some part. They say because you are trying, you know. And sometimes they might even call you and say, hey, I know you are struggling because you want to pay this. We have work for you to, you know. It's a good experience, you know, some things I'm learning, you know.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Well, it's not easy,
you know.
Yeah, well said. To put in a perspective, when Zambia borrowed the Eurobond, $750 million, that was at 4.5% interest. Now they are saying it's trading at 8%. Due to the loss of the Kwacha, what does that mean? If Zambia was paying, say for instance, to pay, they were using in Kwacha terms, they were paying $1,000 Kwacha to pay for $100. They were paying $1,000. Today Zambia is paying $2,000 Kwacha just to pay for $100. That's what this depreciation is going to do to our money and to our economy. We are going to need more money to pay the same amount of dollars. We are going to need double the amount of money to pay for goods and services, to export things, to import things. We are going to pay for double the amount, but for the same dollar. It is a sad situation. Read through it if you have time. Let's try to understand it. What is happening? You remember time? Yes, Dr. Patrick. Go in our times, those who have experience in Zambia when we had food riots. It was a kind of depreciation of the kwacha. The inflation came through. The maize corn went up, and when you touch the five finger, then you have problems in Zambia. This can easily lead to that. Dr. Patrick.
Yes, I would like to just dovetail what the previous caller said and what you're saying. My example, it would directly touch on small businesses. What I'm going to say about small business can be matched with medium-sized businesses, matched with big businesses, matched with government, mm-hmm. matched with multinationals. Every country has a primary rate. And the major corporations have a primary rate, let's say, of 3%. Everyone under that primary rate, or everyone other than the major corporations, because they can pay this money back and they can make more money, everyone else have a floating primary interest rate. So major corporations have 3%. Everybody else have 10, 12, 14, 20, 25, depending on their ability to pay back. Mm-hmm. If we look at a small business person, this small business person go to ask for a loan. This small business person just starting out, their interest and the risks involved, their interest will be charged, or the amount to pay back that loan will be 20%. Mm-hmm. If a multi-corporation go to the same bank and ask for the same amount of money, their interest payback rate would be 3%. If we look at the Eurobond, if we look at the dollar, if we look at the kwacha, look at it in terms of balloon payments. Each particular deal or interest or investment or purchase of money, it has to do or surrounds the balloon payment. For example, if I don't have any money, I'm from the United States. I have money, but I don't have a lot of money. And I'm going to go to the World Bank, and I'm going to ask for some money. And the World Bank look at me and look at my portfolio and say, I will give you $20,000. However, you're going to get a balloon payment. You have to pay me back $20,000 by the end of 3 years. If you don't, you will be charged a 20% interest fee.
Yes.
If I can't do it, they will charge me, and I will be paying back that loan from time immemorial. Now, if Zambia is in a position where there are no monies in which they can call on, there's nothing, there is no gold back in their kwacha, there is no copper back in their kwacha, Zambia has to go and get money in order to pay the cost of doing business. So mm-hmm. where do you go? You go to the World Bank, you go to the IMF, you go mm-hmm. to China, you go to the EU, you go to the United States, and each one of these organizations, institutions, and countries have a hold on Zambia. If you go directly to China, you know China want to get into Zambia. So therefore, if you go to China and you ask for X amount of dollars, China will say, I can give you this money, but it's not based on what the kwacha is backed by. No copper, no gold. It's your land. So therefore, I'll give you $20 billion. However, if you don't pay it back in a certain time, we get a large amount of your land. In the United States, you have different principles. I will give you X amount of dollars, but it's backed on prior investment. So this is what is happening, and the government and the administration and the ministry, finance ministers, are in a quandary. They need money in order to make the government run, and they need money in order to pay private industry, and they're not getting equivalent amount of investment interest back from the major corporations because, you know, they have those economic zones in which you don't pay any taxes.
Yes.
Where are you going to go to get the money? So what happens is your value of the kwacha drops because you don't have financial backing to it. So it continues to drop. And it's the same thing with small businesses, medium-sized businesses, and governments. So look at the primary rates and look at how much it costs, meaning the cost of the kwacha to do business based on the cost of the dollar and where you go to get the money.
Now I'm listening.
Yeah. So... thank you, Dr. Patrick. Some people sometimes we may want to run away from finance and stuff. And only wait for the final result. Or the price of meal has gone up, and probably not knowing where all this stuff is arising from. I think the whole package, the whole basket, has been presented today on this show. Part of it are external forces; those we may not control. A lot of it, in my view, the direction, the politics in our country, where they are just borrowing without any concern that borrowing enough. The bad politics, where the confidence, the freedom of assembly has been curtailed in our nation, all these things, bad politics, as Zebron said, when people know that your government is hated, your government can be kicked out anytime, they may start doing things which may not be beneficial to your currency. So those are things, as always, we send our simple and small message to State House, to our friends, Office of the President, advise the President. Be nice. Give the people their constitution. Let the people assemble. Let the people be happy with you. The kwacha, we will be back. That is our show for this week. Coming up is my good friend Nathan on Perspective. Join us. Another interesting discussion is coming up on there. So my name is again Roger here in Okotox. Until next week when we have other exciting discussions. Sorry, Dr. Patrick, we will not talk about food poisoning. Our time is gone. Probably Nathan, in one way or form, he will bring you up in the next segment to talk about that. So join
sure.
Nathan. As we change discussions to perspective. Thank you so much.